say that being yourself and risking people not liking you is better than experiencing the stress and tension that results from bending over backwards to please others. This is Cherie, your host for Life of a People Pleaser podcast. Stay tuned. Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning into Life of a People Pleaser podcast. Today, I'm joined by
Big Al Sams.
Hey, Big Al, how are you?
Good. Oh, it's different being on the other side of the microphone. This is pretty cool.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm so happy that you actually honored me with your presence and allowed me to interview you.
Oh, honor you with the presence. No. It's my pleasure to do this. This is cool.
I appreciate it. You have the ultimate radio voice, so I'm trying to get there, right? On a lower scale.
Hey, listen, all you got to do is just do what you're doing. Uh-huh. People will identify real quick and identify with your voice. You'll be fine.
And so we've known each other, I want to say, maybe 10 years or so.
Yeah, about 10 years.
And I first started seeing you hosting events like the Martin Luther King, the MLK walks, right?
Yes.
And then you kind of were aware of Cooper's story, my son's story, his cancer yes. journey and all that. So So we've been friends all this time, and I've always been pretty inspired by your career.
Really?
Yes. So can you tell people where you started at and why you decided to go into radio, broadcasting, media? How did you make that decision for yourself?
Okay, I will try as best I can.
Are you going to give us a Cliff Notes?
To give the Cliff Notes as much as I can. Okay, so okay. I started as a pool kid. No, literally, I grew up in Chicago. I'm from Chicago, uh-huh, Illinois. Uh-huh. And I grew up listening to media since a child.
Okay.
So and I listened to radio first.
Okay.
Before I got to television.
Visuals.
But television was always, you know, the cartoons, the, you know, whatever. And they showed everything on TV in Chicago, mm-hmm. everything. Even the old stuff from the 50s, it would show old cartoons and stuff like that.
Okay.
So, but I got involved with radio because I'd be in my room, you know, have to do my homework after school and no TV until I finished my homework. So I was listening to radio.
Okay.
And I would listen to Chicago Bulls games at the time. This is like pre-Jordan, but still.
Uh-huh.
I love the way the announcer described the players.
Okay.
He was more than 6'10", 260. He described the shoes, the shoelaces, how long and sinewy his body is, the hair, the beard, the goatee. Mm-hmm. He would describe everything. And then I would have a chance to go to the game.
Okay.
And I would see him. He nailed it every single thing. I love the fact that he was able to describe things without the ability of sight.
Wow, okay.
And that, I was like, I want to do
that. That's kind of awesome, right?
Yeah. And so I was that kid who would call up and, you know, talk to the DJ and do the horoscope.
Sagittarius.
You know, and so I was always involved with that. And then when I got to college, I got into, at the time they called, before there was mass communications, it was radio, television, film.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to go the radio out, and there was a NPR station. I went to Cal State Long Beach.
Okay.
And there was a
from NPR. From Chicago, you came all the way out here.
Yeah, so it's interesting how I moved from Chicago to there.
Okay.
I'll talk about that a little bit later. Uh-huh. But basically just studied the whole idea, and I learned about radio. Not only the application, but also the, you know, I was interning there.
Oh, okay.
And then I interned at a bigger station in L.A. Now it's called Real 92.3. But at the time, it was called 92.3 The Beat.
That was your first gig?
First gig. Okay. First internship. And I was like, oh, okay. Uh-huh. Well, now I'm in the big time. And I, you know. And
do you feel like Puff then?
it was crazy. But I, you know, I got to really see how the business works.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I gotta do this. But I know interning in LA is gonna be 5 years before I even look at my own studio. I'm like, no, I can't go there. I gotta have it, you know.
Yeah.
And so by this time,
was hungry.
Yeah, by that time, my family had moved from the Bay Area at the time to Sacramento.
Okay.
And my mom was like, why don't you try that radio thing you always wanted to try? Because I went to school, finished school. And I was working in some office in L.A., and I was just bored.
It always works out that way.
Bored.
Not using the degree you got, right?
Exactly. I'm like, what am I doing? I'm 26. What am I doing? And she said, you know what? That's a good idea. I think I'll go for it. I just moved. Mm-hmm. It's like 3 months later after that conversation.
Just did it.
I just did it. And I got here to Sacramento January 97.
Wow.
And January 2nd, 97, I ran into somebody who worked at 102.5.
Wow.
And I didn't know anybody from a can of paint.
Okay.
You know, it could have been, I didn't know what station it was. I didn't know what they played. I just saw the station, the remote at a car dealership. I got to be here.
Oh.
And he said, I'm sure you want to be here. I said, no, seriously, I want to be here.
Uh-huh.
And I started interning, and then the rest is history.
That's the way in?
That was the way in.
Okay.
The internships are the best way to do it, being there, because you get to see how things are happening.
The operation all works.
Yes, yeah. And you get to learn their individual system.
Okay.
And once you learn how they do it, and obviously, if people think an internship is just like, oh, like Puffy, like go get cheesecake
coffee
or whatever. You know, it's not really that. It's you know, once you're in the door, you're in the door.
Uh-huh.
It's whether you get paid or not. And it was priceless for me. And I got to meet all these people. I got to meet Tosh.
Yeah.
So it was me, as far as the internship class. It was me, Tosh, Andrea from Lee and Andrea.
Okay.
And it wasn't, quote, Carmichael Dave, but Dave, he was over at KFBK.
Actually, I remember Carmichael Dave.
Yeah, he's over at KFBK and the sports station. So he's obviously the morning guy now at KFBK.
Yeah.
And so we were like, you know, just trying to figure out our way around.
Yeah.
And, you know, after the internship, they gave me a weekend gig.
Wow.
And I got to be behind. I came on like Sunday morning, 2 a.m. to 7 a.m.
Oh, gosh. Who was up at that time?
Oh, God. Well, Ebro was up that time.
Okay.
So I would come on after Ebro.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And so I would talk to him a lot, because he would hang out and, you know, and we would just talk about what we wanted to do for a career.
Yeah.
And I say, well, I moved from L.A. to come try this.
Yeah.
And he was like, really?
Like a mentor to you then?
Well, kind of. It was. I just kind of watched people. I'm a people watcher, and I just kind of watched people do their thing, and just sit there like, and what I can
soak it all in.
Yes.
Yes.
And what I can get in and what I can't get in.
Yeah.
And I like just apply it. And
yeah.
So, but he would give me a lot of advice, and I would give him a lot of advice.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, I took a chance, and like if I fail, I can always move back to L.A.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and do something else. Mm-hmm. But it's the fact that I just didn't want to be 80 years old, Gordon, coulda, woulda, shoulda.
True.
And that was the biggest thing for me. And so far, things have worked pretty well.
So I'm curious, who was up at 2 to 7? Like, what kind of requests were you getting from 2 to 7? Was it baby making music, or I'm going to church in an hour music?
Both.
Oh.
It was.
Were people calling in to talk to you, or you were just putting on music, a rotation?
Well, in the beginning, it was just putting in music.
Okay.
They're like, who is this fool? I don't know who this guy is.
Uh-huh. And then, well, they're getting used to you, too, right?
Yeah. So I got to talk about myself a little bit. And basically, the management, they're like, okay, as long as he doesn't tear up the station,
okay,
at least it's not 12 noon.
That's true.
Saying something
it's
crazy.
It's not the main hours, yeah.
It's better at 3 a.m. than 12 noon.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. But also, it's my chance to get to work on my persona.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So basically, Big Al is just...
Is Big Al your government name?
Alvin.
Okay.
Yeah, Big Al is Alvin turned up to 11.
Okay.
And so I didn't have to really pull too far away to create this persona.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know people who their nickname is this, and they're totally another person, another name.
Yeah.
And so,
like most musicians or rock stars or DJs,
And I just wanted to take a piece of me and give that out.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of vulnerability that comes with that.
Yeah.
You know, being a people pleaser, you know, if we want to do that, it's trying to, because being a people pleaser is part of our job description.
Yeah,
if they don't like you, then you're gone.
Do you think you were that? Cause that is the title of my podcast, and I'm that by nature. Like, you know, I think it comes from, you know, growing up and wanting to people to like me or love me or whatever. Do you think yours comes from anywhere from your childhood, or does it come from your line of work?
You know what? It comes from, I think, a little bit of both.
Okay.
I've always been, you know, we've moved around. Now I'll explain how I got to L.A. from Chicago.
Okay.
So we moved around a lot in Chicago. And I grew up in Chicago proper. The thing is, if you see somebody, if there's two people from Chicago and you both see you from Chicago, you have to say, what area are you from?
You're from, okay.
And you can't say, oh, I live in, oh, I'm from Chicago. Oh, yeah, where's that? Naperville. And that's like middle of the state. No, that's not Chicago. That's,
oh, okay.
That's like saying, yeah, I'm from the Bay. Oh, yeah, where are you from? Dixon. No, that's not. No, it's not. It's not.
That's hilarious.
And so it's that type of a thing. But I lived in, you know, in, it's an area called K-Town.
Okay.
And it's a stretch of streets, and they all begin with the letter K.
Uh-huh.
I lived on Kaminsky. And it was... We lived there near my grandmother's house, and then we moved, we left there and moved we moved around a couple places, and then we moved to the south side of Chicago, and that's when the enrichment began. For
okay,
me, because it was just before it was just trying to survive.
Surviving.
Without getting shot, and,
yeah,
and the gang violence, and you know, at, there wasn't. Chicago's version of the Bloods and Crips at the time was called the Vice Lords and the Disciples.
Mm, I've heard of it, but never.
Yeah, so they kind of, it's kind of self-contained type of thing. But Southside, they had all different types of gangs, but it was, for a child, it was a lot safer,
mm-hmm,
because it was just, okay, don't mess with those kids, they're going to school. It was that type of a vibe. But the, but in K-Town, they wanted you to act just like the gangsters.
Mm.
So you had to know all the gang signs. You had to know
no.
all the. And when they come check you, you better hit the right signs or else violation, and they beat you up.
Oh, no.
And it was like.
Have you been beat up?
I've had a lots of fights. In seventh grade, I fought every single day.
Oh, my gosh.
In
That's a terrible
school.
Way to live.
Yeah, terrible. It's horrible. And it was, I got into fight, here's the weird thing, I got into fights because my father, my biological father, was like just, I can't say thugged out, mm-hmm, but he was a good boy, and then he ended up doing dirty stuff. You know, he was...
Was he known? People knew him?
He very well known. He was tall, handsome guy, 6'6", uh-huh, you know, was, you know, and so, but he, father's a preacher. But he got into a bad crowd, not necessarily the gangster crowd.
Yeah.
But he was, you know, everybody loved him, and women wanted to be with him. The
yeah.
whole thing.
Yeah.
But he got into a lot of fights,
mm,
and so he would beat up some guy, and now all these years later, now I'm in.
No.
I'm you know.
Yeah.
They called him Pookie. So. Big Pookie's son. Oh, that's Pookie's son. Oh, yeah. So now the kids are trying to beat me up.
Little Pookie.
To get back at, you know, the father.
Yeah.
Like a weird kung fu movie. It was like, what
yeah.
are we doing? So I fought every time after school. It was always after school. And I would cry. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? What did I do?
Yeah.
And my mama was like, look, you pick up something off the ground,
mm-hmm,
and you hit them with it
oh.
as hard as you physically can.
Mm-hmm.
And don't worry about me. I'll take care of it. I'll go down there. I'll do the parent teacher conferences. I want you back home. I want my baby safe.
Yeah.
You and so I
do
literally,
what you gotta do.
Yeah. So I would literally get out of school, and there were a lot of vacant city blocks,
mm-hmm,
and so vacant lots, and they had cinder blocks,
mm-hmm,
and so as soon as somebody ran up, I pick up a cinder block and
clock them.
Bow.
Oh my gosh.
And knock them down, and I would just keep, and just so I can, just enough for me to run. In the direction of my
them.
House,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And they had a bad reputation at that point because of the fighting.
Yeah.
But the reason, they never figured out why I was fighting.
Uh-huh.
He was like, well, he's a bad child. I'm like, well, then, no, I'm trying to, I'm still making straight A's, but now
I'm just related to Pookie.
I'm just trying to make it home. I'm trying to make it home. And
yeah.
so it was weird. So
that has to be tiresome for a child.
And very traumatic.
Did it weigh
too.
On you emotionally? I mean, yeah.
Very
I would
traumatic.
Say, very
yeah.
traumatic.
And
yeah.
it was. I so my mom was like, "We will get him out of this school."
Yeah.
And she fought with my grandparents, who were like, "No, that boy can stay." No, he cannot stay. So they picked me up one day after school,
uh-huh,
and they picked me up and saw me swinging. I mean, as soon as I,
they witnessed it.
Yeah, like, "Grandpa, hey!" And this kid comes trying to swing at me, and I just dropped my bag and. And I just, you know, I'm strangling the kid.
Yeah.
And the guards, you know, they have the little security guards, and they did nothing.
Oh no.
They just like they loved it. They wanted this.
It's like, predominantly black where you grew up.
Predominantly black, yeah.
yeah.
And I'm like, this is like prison.
Yeah.
This is how they start. This is crazy. And the kid and it wasn't. This is before they were. The school district was kind of handcuffed and they couldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, wait a minute, you could pick me up and dust me off and say, go on home and stand there and wait until I'm safe.
Yeah.
But they just sat there and just looked, hands in their pockets.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, oh, okay, I see how this is going. So I just went for broke.
Yeah.
So my mom was like, we got to get out of Chicago.
Yeah, time to go.
Yeah, let's go to Oakland where it's safe.
Little did she know, huh? It's a different kind of party over here.
Yeah, we learned today. I learned today. But it was safer only because they were like...
Was it safer because they didn't know Pookie, Big Pookie?
No, they didn't know Pookie. Yeah, one, they didn't know Pookie. And then two, they were like, they knew who the gangsters were,
uh-huh.
who were trying to be gangsters, and who were just trying to be... the nerds.
Yeah, you know, they didn't make you conform.
Yeah, and it was like either or. You either a thug or a nerd.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, nerd, guilty as charged, yeah. whatever it takes.
Leave me alone.
Don't leave me alone.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to really flourish and start, you know, doing really well in school and mm-hmm. getting into journalism.
Yeah.
And that's how the whole media
thing started for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in 1997, who was the biggest star you ever met at that time?
Wow. Ebro.
Really?
No, I didn't even get to meet. You know, when you first get there, you're like, mm-hmm. low man on the totem pole.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I did get to meet Keith Sweat.
Okay. Was that big for you then?
It was big.
Because he was like big then, huh?
It was a big deal.
Yeah.
And so I was really happy. But I had met stars before mm-hmm. then when I was in high school in Oakland.
Oh, okay. You know, okay.
The first day I got to Oakland, I met Too Short.
Oh, wow.
And this was like the Too Short when he didn't have teeth.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Yeah, it was that Too Short. And I bought his cassette tape, and I played it in the house, not knowing...
What's
this
on
is,
it?
This is...
Yeah. All that mouth he had?
Oh, Invasion of the Flatbush.
What did
bitches.
Your mama do when she heard that?
I played that song... All you heard was, break your ass. What happened? And they're like, why? You know, the bar where you playing, you know.
Uh-huh.
But it was, so I was used to meeting star. I mean, obviously, he wasn't like a national star.
Yeah, yeah.
But I started meeting more national stars when I got working for the station for 102.5.
Yeah.
And it was really enriching because I got to see another person, how they started their life.
Yeah.
And through their hard work and through their, you know, different luck and whatever, and they good fortune, and they became a star.
Yeah.
And, but they worked hard at it. And we would talk about those things
uh-huh.
off air. I'm like, well, why don't we talk about that on the air? Like, how hard?
They didn't want people to know those things?
They didn't want that. They wanted to, like, that's the secret sauce. They didn't want nobody to know. I'm like, I think they want to know. I mean, obviously, they want to know about all the times that people said no to you
uh-huh.
and who gave you that chance and said yes.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just as an average person, I would want to know that.
Yeah, and so me and Keith, we just talked about that.
Huh.
And he said, okay, well, I was a stockbroker in New York.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was going
through
it.
Would never have known that.
Yeah, and he was singing, he was doing open mic singing in different areas in New York. And Teddy Riley happened to hear him, and he was like, hey, I got this tape. And, you know, he gave the tape. And,
uh-huh.
of course, he's like, yeah, sure, I'll listen to it. And uh-huh. he heard the tape. He's like, oh, my God, who is this dude? And
wow.
So that's how Teddy and Keith started working together.
Yeah.
And when Teddy blew up with Guy
uh-huh.
and the whole New Jack sound, it just took off.
Yeah.
And so he's been that way ever since. So he reaches back and helps younger artists and younger singers.
That's what it's about.
Yeah. And so so every time I talk to him, he comes to town, we talk about that conversation.
Yeah.
And he says,
does he remember?
Yeah, he remembers. He remembers. He like, every time he comes to Sacramento, yeah, I want to talk to Al, man. Where Al at?
So you're sought after.
I'm grateful. I'm just grateful that,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
I'm able to change those minds that way.
So being in the seat that you're in now, and you were an intern before, are you good to the interns that work under you?
Oh, very good.
Are you a mentor to them?
Yes.
Okay.
And a few
so you take time. You carve time out
a few
outside
of, them,
of being on the show.
A few of them are on the air right now.
Okay.
And I do more than, yes, I teach them how to hit the buttons. And
right.
yes, I tell them how to turn the microphone on. And
yeah.
when to talk and all that stuff. But off the mic, we talk about the business.
Life stuff, too, yeah.
Yes, uh-huh. about real life and how to deal with fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't come up here, you don't get on the air to get laid. That's not the whole...
Are you sure, Big Al?
Right. I mean,
just kidding. 'Cause,
no, I have seen the glory. Let me just tell you that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've seen other jocks before me.
Yeah, revel in that.
Yeah, and they thought that was... how life is supposed to be. And I'm like, man, I'm you know, from, again, from where, I, where I'm from, you know, the day after you get down and do the damn thing, you have to figure that out. And I'm like, I don't know if y'all are ready for, to figure that out. And so I'm like, I'm always thinking that, that ahead, like, okay, this could happen, but the next morning I gotta make her breakfast, and how is she gonna talk? Now I get to see the real her. And is that worth it?
And then sometimes your job is on the line. Like if it doesn't go well, your name's in the streets now, right? Because it's some female that's upset.
And that's what I always sort of heard. I heard all these stories. Oh, are you friend? Or you know, whoop de whoop wham? But let me tell you something. I have never heard seen any as many people do this in Sacramento because I'm like, oh my God, they got them on file. They got these people on file out here.
Keep those receipts. Huh?
I don't want to get caught up. I got myself out of a lot of trouble by not doing anything.
Good
crazy.
For you. Good for you.
Yeah.
So but you seem like a God fearing guy.
Well, I am. I mean, it's.
I don't feel like you look for those things.
No, I mean,
your purpose is something totally different.
I always talk to my mom about this, which kind of tells you something. I'm a mama's boy, but
I see your pictures of you and mama. I knew you was a mama boy.
But over the course of my life, we've ended up being friends.
Yes.
More than just mother and son. And so I say, you know what? I want. She said, "What do you like in women? What do you like?" I said, "Well, I like the female form. I like the female shape. I love how feminine they can be. I love how they cross their legs.
Aww.
I love when they wear the sundresses. I love that. Those are turn-ons for me. Physical turn-ons. And I lived in L.A., so everybody got a big booty. Everybody got the rack and And so everybody has that, but it's what they do with it.
Yes, true.
He said, you know, I kind of like long dresses. I kind of like those, you know, sarongs. I kind of like, you know, stuff that leaves a little bit to the imagination. And I'm like, okay, I can roll with that. So it didn't matter. It didn't matter if they were petite. Didn't matter if they're big. Didn't matter if they're tall. It's how they carry themselves as women. And that was the part that really, that's attractive to me. And that I want to.
Do you want somebody that's educated, that goes to church, that has good relationship with their parents, that has money?
Exactly. I mean, all those things. All the above. Well, the money thing, because I knew how hard it was to get a couple dollars in the bank account.
Yeah.
So as long as you have the attitude of I'm trying to make it there.
But you don't want to text somebody and the next day they're like, can I borrow $40? You don't want one of those girls.
Well,
right?
No. I don't want them. I don't want them because now they're trying to test me to see, I need my nails done. I'm going to see if you're going to.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, the way I figure it is, listen, I got the message. I got the memo. No money, no honey. Yeah. No finance, no romance.
Yeah, there you go.
But now I'm busting my butt to have a credit score with an 8 in front of it.
Yeah.
I done busted my butt to have some money in the checking account and savings account.
Yeah.
I got, you know, this investments. What is your queendom?
Yeah.
I got my kingdom. Yeah. Where's your queendom?
What's you bring
what's,
to the
what's
table?
Your credit score? What's your FICO? Where's your job at? You know, I want to know that. And so that's. It's those type of things. If you want to get real grown folks with it, now I'm rated.
Well,
I've been schooled on that since I was.
I was going to say that we're now older, right? A little more mature, and so when you start in the era of dating, whatever age you are, 20s, 30s, 40s, things really have progressed differently.
Yes.
I mean, 10 years ago, I was getting unsolicited pics to my inbox. Like, hi, but no thank you. You know what I mean? Now it's like, definitely, what is your credit score? Like, you know, what are you bringing to the table?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's so kind of different.
It's like you have to walk by.
It's leading with more maturity now, I believe.
Hi, my name is Al, 802.
Yeah.
How you doing? It's weird that I have to do that now. It's good because the women know, I know that women need a man that's going to be able to have that has a plan of attack, and I've dealt with men who have rise and fallen and risen and fallen, and they've always come back on their feet.
Yeah,
and I want to be that guy.
Yeah,
I mean, dealing with the pandemic and dealing with the last, you know, the housing crisis, and I know how that feels to have all this money and no money,
no money,
money again. And so it's I think every downside.
Well, there's a difference too when it's something you did and something that happened to you.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I
kind of
you.
Responsibility in that. You know?
Yeah, it's tough, and it's yeah. The last thing you want if you didn't want to slit
try
your own
throat.
Try
having a kid with cancer and that financial burden.
Oh gosh.
Very expensive.
It's very very expensive, and I know I'm just coming out of making payments of my hospitalization.
Oh, from so way I, back when?
From 2016, yeah.
Okay, so I did want to touch on that a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Because it was weird. It's like, I didn't even know what happened to you, and then one day I seen this video of you. I think you were on a grocery store, scooter thing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And you had gotten out of the hospital.
Well, no, that was before I got in the hospital.
Oh, before, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, long story short, I got a very bad septic infection.
Yeah.
And they call it, it's a big...
That has started to eat away at your skin.
Yeah, it was called necrotizing fasciitis. So somewhere I got infected with it on my skin, and it got into my bloodstream.
Mm.
And then it just went crazy.
How long were you hospitalized?
I was hospitalized for about 5 months.
Oh, my goodness.
No, 4 months. So I was in a coma,
uh-huh.
And I woke up out of the coma, January 2016, in the coma. I woke up Super Bowl Sunday, about a month later, and I'm looking at the TV. I'm like, how did Cam Newton get there?
You didn't even know what had happened.
I'm like, what? What? So, and then I had to do lots of. I mean, in a coma, you know, all your muscles atrophy, so
yeah.
You have to rework. You have to learn how to walk
again,
and so lots of different things. I had to learn how to think and act and talk and all that. I had to really from the bottom, and I just wanted to get back to work.
Yeah.
I didn't want, the way they made it was like I'll be an invalid, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to be an invalid. I'm going to get back out there.
It is power of the mind too.
Yeah. But it's based on the survival instincts from Chicago.
Yeah.
And I just like, I got to get back out there and I got to make it. At least I have to try. And if I fail, then I'll fill out the paperwork and call it a day.
Yeah.
But I have to give this a shot.
Yeah.
And I've been blessed so much ever since I got out of the hospital. It's been amazing.
Yeah, I can't imagine that doctor's bill.
Oh, man. It was
5 months? That's a long time.
Yeah, 5 months. Well, at least 4 months in 3 months in the hospital, and then they moved me to a rehabilitation center.
Oh.
And then that was about a month.
Was your job very understanding?
They were understanding, but the thing was they most people, when they're in the hospital, they'll just post something on Facebook and say, hey, I'm here in the hospital, pray for me, that whole thing. I didn't have that opportunity because I was in a coma.
Oh.
And so I literally fell off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And I was in... I'm using the old school term. I was on the back of a milk carton.
Yeah.
And it was very, I was just trying to work on healing. And then by the time, May 5th is when I got back to work of 2016.
Mm.
And I was a totally different person. I had a whole new, I lost a ton of weight.
Yeah.
Just because I was just.
I'm sure you had a different focus and purpose in life too.
Oh yeah. I was fired up. And I came on the radio. And I was just Jesus Christ crucified. I was, the whole thing. I had never had so many, I never had so many people sending me pamphlets and like, oh, well, you come to this, this meeting. I'm like, well, it was free thinkers. I'm like, no, I'm gonna tell you what I think, the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I knew I wasn't supposed to be overly over the top religious on radio, but because I never did that. Anyway, I just knew if somebody asked me how did I get this way, I could tell them in private.
Yeah.
But I wasn't that Bible thumper dude. But I was like, hey, I'm just happy to be alive, and I'm gonna go life to the full.
Yeah.
And whatever adventure comes my way, I'm taking it.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the long and the short of it all.
So having a health issue like that in your life, we both have a mutual friend that passed last year, Reese.
Yes.
And we're both.
Oh God, Reese Roundtree.
Very sad, right?
Very sad.
Very sad.
Oh my God, when I heard about it, I was just like, I was physically hurt.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? It was just so sudden. Like, it was just boom, it was done.
Yeah, it was tragic. I mean, I dated his brother, David, for a while.
Okay.
And so David's the one who texted me first. Mm. And And then, but recently I had like kind of a rapport, like I'd buy him, we're both Virgos, so I'd buy him a drink at the DJ and blah, blah, blah. But I was just like, God, this was a people's people. You know what I mean? Everybody knew him. Everybody loved him and adored him. And so, you know, having your own health scare and then to find out, like, people of our age are not, I mean, they're not, nobody's getting old anymore.
No.
And then a pandemic comes, like, and you're, like, scared to death. Like,
gosh, so it was tough. For me, it was psychologically tough because it was Reese Roundtree and it was Dory Rock, Kinkaholic.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I was going through my divorce in 2010, mm-hmm. I had, me and Kahali had tons of conversations and about how to be this, you know, this, I was broken. I was like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And he said, no, you got to,
you got this.
You got to get up and go. You already have it, but you have to realize that you have it.
Yeah.
It's almost like a weird, I'm using the Marvel Comics thing, the whole Falcon and the Snowman, Winter Soldier, and the dude didn't realize that he was Captain America, and Captain America gave him the shield, like, bro, you are the next Captain America.
Yeah.
But he didn't believe he was Captain America.
Yeah.
So that was the same thing with me. I can do this, but I have to realize that I can do this.
Yeah, yeah.
And once I got back on the horse and started riding, then I started to realize, okay, I can get on the other side of this. I can do this.
Yeah.
And so to see him pass away, and the fact that I couldn't go out and give him a tribute the way I want to, that really hurt.
Bothered you, yeah.
It really bothered me.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, when I was able to get out, I was 7 memorials of people who died of COVID.
Oh my gosh.
And it just really ate at me.
Yeah.
Really ate at me.
Yeah.
And I talked to my grandmother in Chicago and she felt, she's a really social butterfly, you know, even at 95 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And her being stuck at the house and not being able to go out and do anything in the middle of the pandemic, that really
stifled her.
Yeah. So, yeah. And so this whole mental thing, the commercials you see on TV, it's real.
Yeah.
But what I did was I used that to, like, okay, I'm going to find out, am I okay? Does all the piping work? Does all the, you know, so I did everything. I mean, I'm doing TMI, but colonoscopy.
Oh, all your health screenings.
The whole, I did everything. Uh-huh. And everything was fine. And I'm so happy that I did that.
Yeah.
And now that things are opening up and, you know, we're trying to come out on the other side of this thing. You know, I know I can go out and operate and do what I do.
Yeah, that's a big education point, though, because there's a lot of people in our age group that don't go do what's necessary for preventative.
Exactly.
And then because so many people our age are either having strokes or heart attacks, they're like, oh, my friend passed away, you know, but nothing's wrong with me, you know.
It's, right.
It's
you
like,
can't
come
do that.
On, no.
And I understand because there was somebody on my block in Chicago when I was on Hardin Avenue, and we all knew him as, you know, Crazy Earl. But we just stayed away from Crazy Earl.
Mm-hmm.
But I found out as I got older that he was part of the Tuskegee experiment.
Oh, wow.
And they did, I guess, how
like the PTSD stuff, right?
Yeah, well, how the lore goes, they just injected him with syphilis just to see how the effects. And, of course, untreated, you can go stark, raving loony. And everything deteriorates on the inside. And it's just... They just left him alone.
Yeah.
And because he was military, you know, they owned him. So he couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
Of course, if he had known that this is what happened, he could have done something about it.
Yeah.
But he didn't know. He just started going crazy. And in the black neighborhood, they said, oh, he's just going crazy. You know, but he didn't investigate, like, okay, he has syphilis. And didn't know that until he died.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so I know about the mistrust of the black community when it comes to
healthcare
and all that. But this is a new day.
Yeah.
There's actually black researchers and black, there's not a whole crew of black folk just, you know, with beakers, but they're in the research space.
This is just like as important as it is to tell people to go out there and make your vote count. It's just as important to tell people to go get preventative care.
Yeah. You wonder, when you talk about voting, you wonder why they don't retract the right to vote.
Yeah.
They just make it harder for you to vote.
Yeah.
But they can't yank that right from you.
Yeah.
So that means it still matters.
Yeah.
So you need to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
And I always say that on the radio. I say, look, police enforce the laws. Legislation makes the laws that the police have to enforce.
Yeah.
And if they don't enforce those, then they're in trouble.
Yeah.
So why not create the laws that work for everybody?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that takes work. That's the stuff that doesn't get likes on Instagram. You have to really roll your sleeves up and let's make this thing happen.
You know, cancel culture is a real thing. So
people
are hesitant, you know, to speak up.
You either get on the
even
pot.
Even if they have an opinion.
Get on the pot or get off.
Yeah.
You do one of the two. I know people.
Do you see change in your lifetime?
Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, I already have. I mean, it's already happening. People are like, oh, I don't want to raise a child in this way. This is the perfect time to raise a child in this, because this is the way I'm going to thank God for my mama. She always said, hey, look, evil takes no days off.
Mm-hmm. Facts.
You need not to take any days off to do good.
Yeah.
And to be a productive member of society.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very true.
Absolutely.
So I want to talk about how now you just joined television permanently, even if it is a weekend spot, because you were kind of making appearances for Mark in the movie, right?
Yes. So I was doing, even with my radio career, I was always doing different guest spots on different TV shows.
So how did they allow you to keep your Big Al name going to television?
Well,
was it negotiated?
No, because they don't own it. I don't have I'm not on contract.
Okay.
So when that happens, then
might change. Oh.
But I think this is, to me, I think this is kind of a good marketing thing, because people, here's the weirdest thing, Jay. If I say my name is Al,
mm-hmm.
same voice, same everything, they have no clue who I am.
Who you are.
But as soon as I say
I'm Big Al,
you're just adding Big.
Yeah.
In front of the yeah, I know. I'm like, oh my gosh. So, but I learned that it's fractional.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, the same people that know me on the radio, the people that know me on the radio is not the people that know me on TV. It's not the people that know me at the club.
Well, it is kind of a different market.
Well, it's you know, you have to be out there introducing yourself to everybody.
You have to engage them all. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to being a people pleaser doesn't mean you have to kiss somebody's butt.
Right.
It just means that you have to share a little bit of vulnerability to ingratiate yourself to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And once you understand that concept, then it's easier to stick your hand out and say, hey, my name is Al.
Yeah.
And usually every time I go somewhere, I say my name is Al.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll call me Big Al, but my name is Al.
Yeah, yeah.
And Al's fine. You know, that type of thing. They can call me Al or Big Al. I'm okay.
Yeah.
Because it's still me.
Yeah.
And so I don't have a problem with it. But yeah, it's so I learned that type of how to handle things.
Yeah.
And that's kind of helped me move on to the next
phase.
Next phase, yeah.
I know I asked you who was the biggest star you met in 1997, but who is the biggest star you've now met in 2021, whether television or radio?
Well, the biggest person I've met has been Queen Latifah.
Oh my God, she's amazing. And she's beautiful, by the way.
And she's beautiful. And I also met Bruno Mars. I met Bruno.
Just know he has a kind spirit and soul.
He really does. It is not cultural appropriation. He really, I mean, his family.
He just looks very authentic.
His family used to entertain people in Hawaii as a part of a whole family band, kind of like the Osmond family, but it was like, you know, for them.
Yeah.
And he would play Elvis. You know, at 5 years old, had a little outfit, and and it was so cute.
Yeah.
And so we would talk about that in the beginning. Like, my thing is more, why should people care about you?
Yeah.
You know, what makes people, why should we believe in you? And so I want to talk about that part,
uh-huh.
that human part.
The human component, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's very important.
What was the most intriguing about Queen Latifah?
Man, it was, the funny thing is, it was straight New York with it. She, you know, because she's a tomboy at heart, you know, anyway, amongst other stuff. And so when she came in, she had all nine dudes with her.
Oh, wow.
So it was like me and Latifah and like nine other dudes looking at me from Brooklyn, screw face, like, what question you gonna ask now, son? You know, like, all right, bro, just hey, listen.
Oh, that's funny.
And I would ask the questions anyway. Like, you know,
uh-huh.
I was lightweight crushed on you since living single. And she was like, oh, okay. I said, yeah, I want to be Scooter. You know, I want to be Scooter. Yeah. And she thought that was really, and she smiled. And so Shaquem, you know, he came at, because he was there in the studio at the time, and he walked up to me like, yo, son, I never, nobody, you just went for yours, son. You just went for yours. I said, nah, I just wanted to, you know, this is who I will probably never get to talk to Latifah ever again.
You don't think so?
And you know, I can never say never. You're right. I can never say never. But it'll be a very long time before I can holler at Latifah. So I just wanted to say
What you needed to say,
and get it off my chest.
Have you ever interviewed DMX?
No.
Tragic,
no. I really wish I could have interviewed DMX.
Yeah.
But I knew by the time I got into a platform where I could talk to him, he was already in the throes of all of his issues. So it was like so tough. I wish I could have met him, you know, right when the Rough Riders came out. You know, when Eve was out. That's another person I want to talk to. I want to talk to Eve.
Yeah.
Because her story is amazing. You know, it's just awesome. There's a lot of people I do want to talk to.
So how do you, like, if there's someone you were interested in getting on the show, how do you do that?
Well, you have to talk to their
people.
Yes, but talk to their PR folks, talk to their manager, and they have to try to coordinate.
So, do you reach out to them, or a lot of them reach out to you because they're going to be in the area for things they're promoting? Or
some do. Okay. It's like, for example, I had a chance to talk to, I'm using R. Kelly as an example, but I talked to R. Kelly because he was performing in Reno.
Oh, okay.
And so they know that a lot of Sacramento folk travel to Reno to see the concerts. So, you know, we talked, and, you know, I was trying to, you know, everybody's like, ask about them kids, you know, that whole thing.
The ones that are locked up somewhere?
Yeah, I'm like, look, he... Like, obviously, if I ask him the question straight up and down, he's not going to answer the question. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to answer the question. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, just talk about what you're doing.
You might get to put some respect on my name.
Yeah. So I'm like, hey, you know, so I asked the question, and then he really got into it. And then another person that really was shocking, Wendy Williams.
Oh, my gosh. Did you watch her documentary?
Yes.
She seems very intriguing. After watching that, I was like, whoa, she went through a lot.
So I knew her. I remember Wendy Williams when she was doing radio.
Radio. Mm-hmm.
So before Funkmaster Flex, it was Wendy Williams. And so the same stuff. She's like, to me, she's actually calmer, kinder, gentler.
Really?
Because when she was on Hot 97 in New York.
How you doing?
Wilding
out.
Yeah. I mean, rappers was waiting to beat her up after she got off the air. It was nuts.
She's just trying to make a name for herself.
Right. She was trying to make a name for herself as a woman, you know, because she did it before, you know, they thought she's supposed to just be a giggle box for the morning show. But no.
Yeah.
She like, look, I'm Wendy, and this is how it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so the stuff that she would do to push that whole the gay rapper thing, it was just... It was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is before social media. And she had the whole city, like New York, just buzzing.
Yeah.
And then when she left, and by the way, her intern was Charlamagne Tha God.
Mm.
So, of course, Charlamagne's the same way.
Yeah.
You know, just be outspoken. Just.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke to him really quick, all of like 8 seconds. It was at a Grammy Awards thing. And I'm like, yo, how is he saw him on the radio, and I love the fact that he would speak.
Yeah.
You know, he would see another brother and he would like speak. Hey, what's up, son? How you doing? I said, oh, what's up, Charlotte? Hey, question, man. He said, oh, yeah, what's up? And he'd come
and in, he would stop, make the
time. And I'm like, wow. I'm like, I'm thinking he's actually speaking to little old me.
Yeah.
Like, how do you do this thing? He said, man, put your name on it. Speak your truth.
Mm.
And this is like 05.
Yeah.
You know, he would say this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Yeah. Ever since then, I'm like...
Actually, listening to his podcast is what kind of got me wanting to do my own kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I like him. He's pretty
authentic.
Transparent.
He's pretty transparent.
He'll own his shit if he said something.
That's the thing that I liked about him, too, because if he's wrong, he'll say that he's wrong, and he'll...
Donkey of the day.
Okay, of course, he'll go explain why he's wrong, but bro, you're wrong. Just say I'm sorry and keep it moving.
Yeah.
But that's how you gain followers.
Yeah.
That's how people like you, they believe in you.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you can't always be up. I mean, to be relevant, you have to have moments where you faltered somewhere. People relate to that.
Yeah.
There were but times if you're perfect all the time, people are going to be
gosh. That's really a boring life.
You're just giving internet trolls and social media people ways to find something on you. You know what I mean? Just be relatable.
And if you have a weak heart doing this, mm-hmm. don't do it.
True.
Don't do it. You
True.
Have to be really strong in your convictions.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be a jerk.
Yeah.
But just be strong in your convictions and like, hey, look, I'm willing to consider.
Yeah.
But this is how I think.
Yeah.
And then just go from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now on Good Day, I just want to touch back on that real quick. Mm-hmm. Do you like it better than radio?
It's kind of
Do
both.
You like your face being seen?
You know what?
Are you a camera person?
I don't mind it, really. Yeah. I just, you know, but I know that there's a certain way that you're supposed to look, and I'm like, I don't fit that mode uh-huh. at all. Uh-huh. I'm a big dude. Uh-huh. You know, I'm
You're not that big in person.
No.
It's so funny because when you actually see somebody in real life, you're like, eh, not that big.
Yeah, but then the whole.
Not shorter than, not you, but just in general when you
right,
see
but,
feeling like.
But they like, you know, that the camera adds 10 pounds.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh
yeah.
God, but they probably added 40 pounds to me.
They said the same thing. They had like 45.
I'm like, golly. So, uh-huh. but I like, you know what, this is me, and I'm a, you know, I've done more stuff in a month doing this TV show
wow.
than I've done, like, in a year at a radio station.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
I've done just about everything. I talked to Ashley Williams a lot, who's also on Good Day.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm like, how
Beautiful girl.
Do y'all do this? This is insane.
Yeah.
I went from making bread at somebody's house to picking cherries in some field.
All within then, 2 hours time
yeah,
frame?
Yeah, and then a rage room and uh-huh. smashing stuff and then go to a estate sale.
And I saw that, yeah.
And I'm like, how do y'all, it's nonstop. It's
yeah.
not, and you have.
Is it scripted or it's off cuff too?
Oh no, it's off the cuff.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
And it's live, there's no pre-record.
Oh, okay.
If you
but there's no like, okay, we're gonna go to an estate sale when we shoot on Saturday, ask these questions.
No.
Okay.
No, and in fact, they love that though, that's why they hired me. They're like, okay, he's gonna be, because I always hear, just be Al.
Yeah.
Just be Al.
Uh-huh.
And so sometimes I probably won't ask who, what, when, where, why.
Yeah.
I'll be like, and so I told this one lady, so I went to this garden party, and it was a fundraiser, and it was in Shingle Springs,
okay.
You know, and it was, you know, the place was beautiful, the
uh-huh.
koi pond, and a pond over here, and the backyard was immaculate,
uh-huh.
and that first thing that blurted out of my mouth, this is the home I want when I win the lottery. I get that Mega Millions.
That's what you said.
With a check. Like, look,
uh-huh.
get out.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, and so she laughs her butt off because she didn't believe
yeah.
it was so, it's literally off the cuff like
yeah.
that. And
yeah.
I can just say what
say
I
whatever.
Think. And so I know what not to go, I know not to go off the cliff, as it were.
Yeah.
But just to say how I feel.
Last fall, I did a Netflix show. I recorded an episode for a show that's coming out.
Mm.
And I couldn't even believe for reality TV how scripted it was. Like, I just, it was an eye-opener to me. How
yeah.
many times you have to go back and do that again?
Yeah.
Go back and do that again. Could you say this? But no, could you tell us this? And I was just like, this is not real. Like, and then like, when they warn you, like, you're going to be recorded everywhere you walk, and then you forget, and you're having a conversation, and you're like, oh, that's where you see where they snip things together and made it look like you said something awful
yes.
when you didn't say something awful.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Reality TV is the biggest oxymoron ever, ever.
I know.
Whoever invented that.
I'm so nervous when it comes out because I'm like, oh, my God, did I slip up somewhere?
You're like, everybody,
oh, that podcast is in the toilet now.
Oh, no, it's not. In fact, you'll get a lot more fun. You're like, I'm going to see for myself, is she real or not?
And yeah.
So, I mean, it does help marketing-wise. I mean, no news is good news.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, you don't like the fact that they create your narrative for you.
I know. It's not real.
Like, and it's not. And
yeah.
you have to create your own narrative.
Actually, when I was there, me and the girlfriend that I did the show with, we started another podcast called For Fuck's Sake, and it's four women, four different ethnicities, all in our 40s, all single parents, all dating scene, right?
Wow.
And we kind of talked to a producer about it, and they're like, that's not out there. Especially four women that are white, black, Native American, and Mexican.
Mm.
Go do that. Go record that. Get that podcast out there.
Yeah.
And so we're working on that.
Oh, you should do that.
Too, yeah.
I would love to be a fly on the wall when that happens. Because I think I'm always, when I'm on the radio, when I talk about dating, I'm always talking to the men.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, all right, first off, wash your ass.
Yeah.
That's your first mistake. All right, that's the first thing. Second of all, wear some clothes that match. I mean, I understand my fashion is on the injured list, but I do my best to try to be cool.
Well, if you ever need a guest to come and have a conversation with, I'd be happy to join you.
Oh, yes.
About anything.
Exactly. So I would always school the fellas in, like, okay, women love color. They love color. They don't like this daddy rich, pimp daddy, you know, orange, all red, everything. Don't do that. Yeah. Just and stick your hand out and say, hi, my name is Russell.
Oh, please, yes, please.
None of this, hey, baby, in the yellow, can I be your fella? None of that. It's old. They put that in the dad joke box.
None of that little pookie stuff.
No pookie. And so just be yourself.
Yeah.
And like, hey, if you got some money, got a couple dollars in your pocket, hey, buy her a drink. You know, buy her something that she's going to like, she's going to remember you with. It's just a small sample size saying that I care about you.
You know what I think is the worst thing, and I'm just going to say this really quick to insert for you.
Mm-hmm.
In your 40s and dating is, yes, the date's arranged. Yes, you show up to the place, and then all of a sudden the person's like, oh, I was just laid off, or oh, this, and you end up footing the bill for something you thought was either mutual or they invited you on.
My mom would slap me upside my head if she heard about that. Look, if I'm inviting you, I figured I should pay.
Yeah.
If I don't have the money, I'll reschedule the date until I get some money.
By the way, they don't have the money and they want to go to the steakhouse and then tell you after they just ate the plate. That's what we're dealing with.
That's called trifling. You're just trying to get
there's a wife, baby mama, and another side girl somewhere.
Oh,
you just don't find out till it's too late.
Don't tell me about the janky people. Let me tell you, I've working in the radio, I've seen a lot of janky people.
Yeah.
I've seen women come to the club if an artist is going to be performing, and they've left their kids in the car.
It's not that serious.
I'm like, dude, you can buy the T-Pain record. It's okay. You don't have to. You know, you ain't gotta. T-Pain ain't going home with you once he look at you and your thighs.
It's all auto-tune anyways.
I mean, it is. He tells you, it's auto-tune. Yeah. I'm literally singing with auto-tune. But actually, by the way, he can really sing.
I know. I've heard him without the auto-tune.
Oh, yeah. And so I'm like, he can really do it, but it ain't that serious.
I know.
You know? Yeah. Like, well, oh, God, when Tyrese came, oh, God, it was...
I can't with Tyrese. Oh, I followed him on social media once, and he is like a vulnerable person emotionally, mentally. It's hard.
Yeah, he is.
You want to love him, but you're just like, be quiet.
just say what you gotta say, and then sit down.
Yeah,
you know, it's okay.
Yeah, you're good to look at. But
don't be too extra. Don't be too extra. But again, the Hollywood bubble, man, it's a mother. They'll tell you that you're the baddest man on the planet, and then
those egos sure go.
Yeah, it's tough. And so a lot of these artists who survived this long, they find out the hard way, but they're able to bounce back and
you know who's the most underrated related to Tyrese, meaning acted with him before, is Taraji. She never gets enough.
Yes, Taraji.
She never gets enough.
Man,
no, she really doesn't.
She gets no love. She doesn't get enough love, especially when she did Hidden Figures. Oh,
she doesn't.
That movie.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that part of history.
I didn't either.
The black mathematicians. Yeah. That was amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Taraji, she rocked it.
Just as a whole, she's just such a good person. And you're just like, come on, can't you just give her some kudos a little bit?
Throw her
a little bit, you know?
Yeah, give her flowers,
but she still seems very humble. You know,
She is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think a lot of it is just, you know, you realize that they're just trying to work just like everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to wrap up this episode.
Okay.
Thank you for sitting down with me.
Yeah.
We could do this again, you know, like we could choose something to talk about and conversate again.
I'm down.
You are down. Okay. And, you know, always, like I said, I'm welcome to come join you somewhere.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
But thanks for the moment. And do you have any last words of advice for me doing a podcast?
Well, I'd say this. I'm doing a lot of public speaking lately.
Okay.
And obviously not.
Emceeing a lot of things.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm emceeing stuff and concerts and stuff. Now it's coming back, but I tell people, know who you are, know your voice, and know who you're talking to. So, you know who you are. You know your vulnerabilities. You know your strengths. You know your weaknesses.
Yeah.
And have that in your bag.
Okay.
And then know your voice. Of how you're gonna deliver that message. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be, you know, inquisitive or just be a jerk all in somebody's face, or, you know, master that technique. Mm-hmm. And then know the audience that you're aiming at. And if you're aiming at strictly women, then that's cool. If you're aiming at entrepreneurs or whatever, but know those three things, mm-hmm. and you'll be okay.
Yeah.
You're gonna be just fine.
Yeah.
You know, all that's in the be yourself box, but those are the little pieces that you have to be yourself with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good advice. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think I'm doing all right.
I think you're doing more than all right. You're doing fantastic.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Well, until next time. Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Episodes here each week. Make sure to subscribe, like, follow, and share. And remember, take care of you before anyone else. All love.
Love.
Thank you for tuning in. What a great episode.